Thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com Radio. Today's featured guest, Arch Crawford from Crawford Perspectives. Arch Crawford combines technical analysis with planetary alignments and astronomical anomalies for 30 years. Welcome back, Arch Crawford.
It was 38 in May.
Arch, it's great to have you back. I wonder if you could give us your thoughts on this Greek drama. I mean, that is the topic du jour.
Well, they are saying whatever is happening, whether it's Greek or not, will be much worse on the 14th and 15th. There's a very massive multi-planet alignment that is more or less significantly difficult or negative. So I'm watching for that, and then the next one after that, I think, is around the end of the month, and then we get September looks much, much worse for everything.
So the worst may not be behind the markets just yet.
You know, if you were watching Sunday afternoon on the E-minis, when they opened at 6 o'clock Eastern, they were down about 41 points on the S&P, which usually would have been about 350 on the Dow. The Dow futures opened a little bit later, and they were not down anywhere near that much, but they were down about 220. They spent yesterday coming all the way back overnight mostly, and then during the day continued moving higher, although they were still down on the day. The Dow actually closed up $9, I think, after being down, should have been down over 350. So there's a very heavy manipulation going on in here still, as we've talked about many times before.
You're right that the pre-market futures for the S&P and the Dow were off sharply. In fact, there was quite a gap down lower by several hundred points on the Dow. And we saw that fill abruptly over the next several hours before the market opened. I don't have time to follow the markets during the week, but I like to see them pre-market. We had a big gap down that probably led to some covering by the shorts amid the panic selling. You know, the smart money was covering its shorts there probably. Once you start to see this type of volatility enter the market, typically a downtrend follows. And it looks like that's what you're expecting here.
I just put out my newsletter yesterday. That's the July the 6th. We have in there the Shanghai chart, which has broken two very important trend channel lines from way back. One quote about it was, "The second largest stock market in the entire world is collapsing right in front of our eyes. Over the past several months, I've been trying to hammer home the comparison between what we are experiencing right now and the lead up to the U.S. financial crisis in the second half of 2008. Then I have the chart of the velocity of M2, which has dropped to below the low of anything since they started charting it in 1959 or so. So that means that all this new money that's coming in, nobody is spending it. And that is a very serious situation. And it's more serious than the Greek, because the China market has lost $3 trillion worth of value since June the 12th. That is, you know, utterly amazing to me. Now, the Dow Jones and the S&P came down. The Dow broke the 200-day moving average a little over a week ago, briefly, and then quickly recovered and went back below it, I think, Friday. Or maybe it was Monday of last. It was Monday of last week that it hit the low, or Tuesday morning. And then it bounced just up to the long-term trend line, which it had just broken. And now it has come down and broken those lows as of today on the day-only cash Dow Jones. So that's long-term trend lines and 200-day moving average. If we close anywhere near down here, will look pretty terrible from the technical standpoint. The S&P came down to the 200-day a week ago, rallied up to that trend channel line again, and then has come back to a new low today, but it's above it Now it says the cash is only down 547 at 2063, which is back above the 200-day moving average. The NASDAQ never did break the 200-day yet. The NASDAQ 100 is the, you know, the premier part of the NASDAQ. But these intermediate to long-term, they're breaking intermediate and long-term support levels, which means that they could go a lot further.
Excellent analysis, and I am seeing weakness developing throughout the charts. You know, we had Ralph Acampora, I believe it was, recently discussing some of his concerns with regard to non-confirmation relative to the Dow. And, of course, this goes way back to Dow theory, even Charles Dow.
Well, I had that on the cover of my last, the June letter, had the death cross in the Dow transports. And they've continued on down since then.
But we've all watched these markets now for so long. There is a tendency for the sky is falling rhetoric to pop up after such a long advance.
I think the damage here is greater than you will be able to make another new high. If it does it before September, it's still possible. But from September, I think we're going to get extremely serious things going on, and it could happen in July because we have the middle of July and near the end of July that look nasty from the sky view, but the September is some of the worst that we have seen. Some major events in the world.
From my trend analysis and momentum indicators, I can't buy the top is in yet. I need more confirmation on a longer term basis. You know, hat tip to you all if you've caught the cycle peak here, because I tend to ignore the peaks and troughs and shoot for the trends in the middle. So I am always late to the party, fashionably late to the peak here perhaps, but I'm still on record saying that I expect higher highs in these markets. I think it's going to stun a lot of people. And one of my favorite indicators is the blogosphere. Pun intended here, the blogosphere. The blogosphere is what I'm calling it now, because it's no longer a sphere. It's just filled with fear. And I don't like to see that type of a fear level at a market peak. I expect more euphoria and complacency. I know it's more of a qualitative set of indicators. I'm all ears to your methodology, and we certainly need to listen to diverse opinions. Give us an idea then of what you think is going to be the impetus driving these markets lower, and then where will the next bull market emerge?
I'm thinking that the next bear market is going to be so bad that we might not ever recover as a civilization.
Okay, we're talking a deflationary collapse, almost like a complete reset of the system. The Kondratieff winter?
Yes, absolutely.
That's pretty extreme, Arch.
Well, look at the debt levels worldwide. They're pretty extreme, and they're not ever going to be paid off unless we go into hyperinflation, which, you know, pay them off with a couple of trillion dollars.
Just walking around money, right, in hyperinflation. The fiat money system, you know, this entire idea of fractional banking is, I think, predicated on the idea that you cannot ever pay it off because so much money is printed into existence and they can print an endless amount of money at no cost to them. They don't even have to pay for ink and cloth anymore.
They just push the button.
You've got robots pressing the digital money button, and all you have to do is just walk by every 6 months or so and put a little oil.
On the three keys, the one for the billions, the one for the trillions, and the one for the...
Okay, clearly then you're looking for a reset moment. You're looking for a house of cards implosion where the house of cards is extended so high, let's say to the lunar surface, that as it's imploding, we don't even notice it on terra firma.
Well, if you didn't notice, we just went by Pluto.
We're actually reaching Voyager 1 now. Levels. I mean, we're outside the solar system. Okay, I'll stop with the silly metaphor. You know, Arch, fear sells, and we've all been accused online of being fear mongers. I'll be honest with you, I tend to gravitate towards fear-related articles, and I think it's just subconscious.
Well, it's nothing. I've not promoted anything that I don't believe myself. As that goes, what is it? If you can keep your head while all about you are losing theirs, you probably don't understand the seriousness of the conditions.
So let's give folks an idea. Let's try to substantiate this idea that the ultimate day of reckoning that has been thrown around for over 15 years on the internet might actually happen this time. That we're crying wolf, but this time there are several packs of wolves encompassing the little cottage, the small community. Is this really the end game? And let's outline some solid bullet points.
Well, one is the Greek exit or the Greek bankruptcy. The only major country that we've had in bankruptcy was Argentina. I think they did it several times over 100 years. But other than that, it's been just Zimbabwe and like manner countries. But Greece is a substantial country. It's not a large country, but it is, I would have to say, substantial. And then what's happening now is has developed worse in China with the crash taking place. It's down, what, 25% in 3 weeks.
It's a remarkable smackdown. I remember last Friday reading a report that said the Shanghai index was down 30% from its high to the low. And I thought, well, that's got to be, they've added an extra zero in there. I had to pull up the chart because it had been such an impressive rally. We've seen instances like this. For instance, in 1987, the S&P 500 was off roughly 20, 25%. I think it was almost exactly 25%. And within about 6 months' time, the recovery began. And I'd say within, by 1988, the summer of 88, we'd recovered all of, not most, of that initial 25% haircut.
I remember that the single day drop was 22%. And I had predicted, I made my name in Wall Street with that drop because I predicted the day and that there would be a crash after that top day exact 3 weeks prior to the top day.
Isn't that funny? And I remember the day like it was yesterday. I was just starting college. Everyone knows your call. It made your career. And you're looking for another decline, but this time it could make what happened in 87 seem insignificant.
Well, it won't be insignificant because it was a record setter for all time so far. But even if this one could be worse because it could end freedoms in the West.
So you're expecting then a Jade Helm martial law moment?
Yes. Well, Jade Helm begins in a few days and goes on for 2 months. And I think near the end of that is when we get all of these negative, really powerful negatives in the sky and the eclipse series and Armstrong's pie date. A number of other people are looking for September to be difficult for other different reasons.
Oh, sure. No, we talked about the rabbi, his Shemitah 7-year cycle. Yeah, it comes to pass in this fall, which also seems to coincide with Martin Armstrong's, as you mentioned, pi cycle, which is roughly 7 years, give or take, at least when I've tried to back engineer it a few times here. Plus, we have a presidential election coming up. There are elections in the works in the next year or two. It's not terribly favorable of a season. Some difficult fall periods, September, October. But, you know, if we look back at the Treasury Department and the Fed's playbook, circa 2008, 2009, and we saw how they reacted to big 700-point down days, 900-point days on the Dow, almost 1,000 from peak to trough. I mean, they essentially threw everything they had at the problem. I mean, it was damage control, fired up the printing presses, and you can be sure they're going to try everything they can this time. But we don't have a Hank Paulson. We don't have Ben Bernanke at the helm. We have a different team. What happens this time?
Well, I remember that day of TARP, and the Senate voted it down. And the next day, they told the senators, if you do not vote this today, we will be in martial law tomorrow. And that is why the Senate passed it.
I think Price tells about 95%. Of the truth. I don't think it's too much hyperbole to suggest that the markets did come to a close on many levels between 2008, 2009. I mean, many, many stocks, Apple, for instance, IBM, many of these high flyers could be purchased for pennies, literally on the dollar, were it not for government intervention. And dare I say, you know, deus ex machina, a divine intervention. That's really what it amounted to. We wouldn't have markets today, and we might very well have a different flag or multiple flags flying over the United States. There is a really fantastic science fiction writer, Philip K. Dick, you might recall, amazingly troubled man, but probably one of the greatest creative thinkers since H.G. Wells, wrote many, many novels, most of which now have been movies, Blade Runner, Minority Report, Total Recall, you know, so many of these huge blockbusters. He never earned a penny off of any of it, sadly. He also wrote a book called The Man in the High Castle, and that's essentially a story that seems to be almost playing out now about what if the Axis powers had won the war. Well, isn't it interesting that Europe, to me, is behaving like a community, very similar to if maybe they hadn't won the war, but there'd been an armistice?
Well, I'm reading the Wall Street Journal today, and they're talking about the rest of Europe being angry about the power that Germany has over the EU. So, literally, you're correct.
But that doesn't change the fact that there's going to be animosity, huge animosity, that begins to develop against the haves and the have-nots. We are entering a period where there's going to be a huge stigma, chasm between the haves and the have-nots. There is class struggle and potential warfare. I would like for you to kind of kick the feet up on the ottoman, grab your pipe, kick back, and tell people how you think just how this might play out here.
Well, de Tocqueville was one of the first analyzers of the democratic process, and he wrote that the problem with a democracy is that the have-not can vote themselves whatever they want, and that eventually causes the downfall into a situation run primarily by the business corporations. And that's fascist. And you have to have a strong man to tell the kids that they can't have any more candy. And that's why democracies turn into fascist governments. And a woman wrote a book, Naomi Wolf, in the 90s about the end of America. And she had 10 things that would happen that would cause us to move to a fascist police state. And the 10th one was when the government 3 or 4 years ago ordered 20,000 drones. And so she said we were a police state as of that day, all 10 things that happened.
She's revisited her bullet points over the years and reiterates your point that, you know, we've all followed Naomi Wolf's work over the years and many, many others. Certainly the bedrock has been laid here. You know, I mean, we have the foundation for dictatorship. They're just waiting, I think, don't you agree, Arch, for the right moment to put it into play?
Well, it's actually been into play because what the people voted for in several instances now have been reversed by judges primarily. And one of the latest thing is just has been that there were 31 state votes on same-sex marriages, and 30 of them said no. And now the Supreme Court has said it's the law of the land. And so that and the thing of making corporations equal to a citizen in terms of what they can pay out on the elections and whatnot, these are things that have already destroyed any kind of democratic republic that we had for whatever time we had it. I remember Ben Franklin says, well, you have a republic if you can keep it.
Certainly, it was nearly severed in twain in the 1860s. That was, according to some historians, not much of a close call. But tell that to the hundreds of thousands who lost their lives and limbs at that time. Catastrophic event.
What most people do not realize is that the bankers in Europe were annoyed that we got away from them and they sent members of an organization called the Jacobins here to foment the war.
Oddly enough, I addressed that. Of course, now I stand on the shoulders of giants when I do it, but in Wealth Building Strategies 2010, I talked just about that, how the War of 1812 was a banking war. Much of the conflict, you know, you recall Andrew Jackson's edict about how he would...
By one vote, they failed in putting him out of office.
I'd like to get an idea of how do you see this playing out? Because you've made a really profound, unsettling prediction or probable outcome. It's feasible. If that's the case, keeping in mind that we know they're going to throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at the problem... Okay, the powers that be. How bad does it get, and how similar to the 2008-2009 credit crisis will this be?
It may start off like it, but I think it's going to get out of hand this time, so that by 2017, I think much worse will happen this fall or next year. So maybe we could be getting things back together a little bit by late 2017. I doubt if it'll be, there may be a president in name, but it'll be a dictator in fact.
So you think they'll hold the current 48 contiguous states in place? It won't be fractured regionally, but it may be a police state.
Yes, that it becomes obvious that we've already got a police.
Are you concerned at all about these red and blue lists? Supposedly, according to Alex Jones, a former governor of Minnesota, Jesse the Body Ventura, a few other sources indicating, Dr. Stanley Monteith, a few others, that there are red lists and blue lists, and if you are unfortunate enough to find your name on one of the red lists, that around the time of martial law, you might just not be easy to locate for your friends and family.
I'm aware of all of that, and I think it is either going to happen that the current president may say, there'll be some kind of another black flag event, and possibly nuclear, and the president will say, I'm sorry, we can't have an election now, or there'll be a backlash from the right that takes over and put in the strong man, but there'll be greater emphasis on bringing order out of chaos, which is communist mandate.
Right, Hegelian dialectic, exactly. You initiate a problem, and then you have the solution. Of course, if you have all the power, that is, you know, who cares who's the standing president when you can print money all day long, any amount you need. My guess is that you're slowly continuing with your monthly plan of throwing a few cannolis at S&P shorts at this point.
Yes, I keep rotating a handful of options. I remember in 08, I put $2,500 into S&P options and took out $500,000. Steady, and it's actually been a steady train up to now.
Yeah, but, you know, when it pays off big. I mean, again, I think we mentioned last time that that's virtually the playbook for Nassim Taleb, Fooled by Randomness, The Black Swan, and so many fantastic articles and concepts. I guess it's Dr. Taleb now, up at New York University, I think it's City of New York. Had a hedge fund for a very brief period of time, did phenomenally well, and, of course, he followed that playbook exactly. You put the bulk 90% of your funds in bonds or whatever is considered as safe as cash, throws off a little bit of interest, and the remaining 5 or 10% you put into extremely out of the money calls and puts. It certainly can pay off, and when it pays off big. The main point is you never blow up your account because he is not a believer in the, as I'm sure you know, Gaussian distribution, the standard normal that we use so frequently in science, He's a bigger believer that when we're dealing with behavioral science, that people act in very irrational times in extreme ways, just like a panicking herd. And under that type of situation, you get fat tails, you get kurtosis, right? You have kurtotic distribution, or what's called the Pareto distribution. Then you have extremes, and basically this is all just jargon for much greater extremes in prices than forecasted by almost any model. So you can suddenly tomorrow wake up and you're in a credit crisis.
I wrote about this. I did a study on the changes on the open and on the close on the Dow Jones going back 50 or 60 years, and it showed that it happened fairly moderately up until the last 3 or 4 years, in which case it's been extending on the open and on the close largely. In other words, we're getting the fat tails there, and we have been already for a couple of years. And the next week, the Wall Street Journal published it, and my chart, and didn't give us any reference to us in the article.
I have a feeling that those of us who follow your work can appreciate your findings. What do you attribute to that, and what do you think it portends for the market?
I think it portends that there are forces in the marketplace that are making sure it looks good at the close.
Intervention, again, that divine intervention, deus ex machina. How interesting. So the term actually comes from the Latin and the Greek, where they would have the machine, or that's what they called the crane at the time, the machina, lower down the divinity, the divine, from the sky to work out the problem in the play. It looks like that invisible hand is hard at work.
It does appear that way. And I said that this doesn't prove the point, but it suggests that you should look at it. Well, look at my May newsletter. I think I send them to you. I don't know if you get them or not.
I haven't seen one in a while, but I'll certainly review it.
Okay, I'll send it to you. Make sure you have it and put you back on the list if you've slipped off under another.
One of those spam-filled emails that I no longer bother even trying to open.
I had that happen in the last 3 months.
And I wonder if you could tell people more about the service you provide, as well as any contact information that you'd like to leave with the listeners today.
The easiest way is to Google my name, Arch Crawford, and then you get the website at www.crawfordperspectives.com. The phone number here is 520-577-1158. And we follow the stock market, general market timing. We don't do anything with stocks, individual stocks. We talk about gold, we talk about rates and bonds, we talk about the U.S. dollar and the oil, and give opinions on most of those.
This is going on 40 years of analysis.
Yes, well, when I was 20, I took a bus to New York City, transferred up from Merrill Lynch, and shortly after that I became the first assistant ever to their technical analyst, Robert Farrell, who became a legend in his own time, being always voted as the best on Wall Street in the major magazine polls from Wall Streeters. That was 1961 to 64. I didn't start my newsletter till 13 years after I left there.
Promising you this for almost a decade, but there's a wonderful book out of print. I think it was a bestseller back in the late 1800s on Wall Street, but it's the story of an immigrant who comes to the United States, and he settles in at an apple orchard in the New York area at about your age when you arrived in New York, and he began to trade the markets only 100% based on astronomical events and patterns that he found in the heavens. He made quite a fortune and then helped many other people along the line, immigrants as well as Americans.
Well, I have not heard about that. The first one I heard of was, no, I've got lots of out-of-print books.
I actually purchased it from a company that specializes in financial tomes that are out of print 10, 15 years ago, and it's sitting up in my family attic, nice and dry. Next time I wander up that way as I move the snake skins and cobwebs out of the way, I'll see if I can grab that copy and send it to you. All right, Arch Crawford, thanks so much, and have a great remainder of the day.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.